Amina is an activist during the Arab Spring. Her blog, Gay Girl in Damascus, attracts readers from around the world. When she's mysteriously abducted, her followers mobilize, desperate to save her. What they find shocks them. I'm Samira Moyeddin, the host of Gay Girl Gone, a new 6-part series from CBC. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Rosemary Barton.
And I'm Alameen Abdul Mahmoud.
I still love that theme song after all this time. And this...
I know, right? It's the best.
This is Party Lines.
And it is time, Rosie, to check in with your home province.
Ugh.
We're going to talk about Manitoba. I know, we got to do it. Because Manitoba right now has the highest COVID-19 infection rate compared to any other jurisdiction in Canada and the U.S., as other provinces are basically planning their reopenings. I'd like to know, how did Manitoba get here?
Yeah, I'd like to know that too.
I'm sure you would.
First, though, I want to turn to Quebec's Bill 96. It's this big piece of legislation to strengthen Quebec's language laws, protect the French language, their identity, and also change the Canadian Constitution unilaterally. This has been a big issue in the past. What's the conversation sounding like right now?
That's a fun one to get into, so let's do it.
Let's do it. I'm sure you and most of the people listening to the pod are familiar with Bill 101, or at least like the idea of Bill 101 in Quebec, which was created in the 70s to protect French language in the province and make sure that the majority French-speaking population had access to French services, that there would keep French workplaces, all those different things that are important in Quebec. And that language legislation had not been vastly overhauled until recently, when the Premier François Legault and his cabinet put forward a new version of that called Bill 96, not quite as catchy, but still,
yeah.
around language and identity. And just from a language perspective, the idea was that it would address some concerns that the province, the government has, primarily on the island of Montreal, around fading French language, doing things like capping attendance in English CEGEPs, English colleges, giving immigrants better access to French language training, making sure that French was required in workplaces where there were even a smaller number of employees rather than big ones. All things that they say they need to do because they feel the French language is under threat. But the other piece of Bill 96, which directly, you could argue, affects the rest of us, or is at least something
yes.
that should be on our radar, is the notion that Quebec wants to, through Bill 96 says it can amend the Constitution to say that Quebec is a nation, that French is its official language and its common language. And it believes it can do this unilaterally, that it can just say it is so, and so it becomes so.
Yes.
And they say that they can do that under Section 45 of the Constitution. This is interesting to me, because it seems like we've tried to have conversations in this country for many decades before we were born and after we were born, you and I,
yes.
about Quebec's, you know, distinctness, and that caused a lot of ruptures and rifts in the country. And now here we are, and it seems like it's just happening. It's just happening. And
it's just happening. Okay, yes, that is like the bewildering part of this, because I want to tell you a brief tale. Can I tell you a brief tale?
Oh my God, please.
Okay, there's a brief tale of a young Elamine who's like sitting in history class in, I don't know, let's say like grade 10, so like 2002-ish.
Oh my God, I'm so old. Okay, go on. Yeah.
Stop this. It's fine.
Oh my God, I just had like a minor heart attack. Go on.
In 2002, I'm sitting there in grade 10, and at this point, I'd been in Canada for 2 years or so, two and a half years or so. And I'm like starting to get a hang of this language thing. I'm excited to like, I don't know, learn a thing or two about the history of this country that I'm still newish to. And that's when I come across the chapters in the book about Meech Lake and about Charlottetown. And both of those are, of course, like failed attempts at amending the Constitution to recognize, among other things, the distinctness of Quebec as a nation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fascinated way back in 2002 about two things. One is like how divided the country was over amending the Constitution. In Kingston, Ontario, I don't know, like Canada seemed like a pretty chill nation overall. And then two, I would say like how recent this history was. I mean, again, this was 2002. I was reading about 1992. I'm like, given everything we know about how contentious it is to change the Constitution, how deeply sensitive the topic of Quebec nationhood is or can be, I want to connect it back to the editorial meeting that you and I had earlier this week where you brought this up. And it's like, I'd seen a headline here or there, but I'm not seeing the volume of conversation around Bill 96, around how contentious this is. And it's like, Quebec wants to politely ask if we can just make a couple of quick edits to the Constitution, quick but significant edits. And we should say, like, there isn't the same anxiety about doing them as there were, you know, around Meech Lake, around Charlottetown. And like, sure, columnists are concerned. And like, we've heard from a few Anglophone groups that have raised alarm over this in terms of like the minority rights of Anglophones in Quebec. But there is, as far as I can tell, no political representative for the, wait, is this a good idea crowd? Like, it just kind of like the bill is a story, but the bigger story is how easy this is going so far.
Yeah. It's kind of like Quebec is sneaking in the back door of your house, but you haven't quite invited them over yet, you know?
Yes.
Like, hey, they just show up at the party. And then nobody minds because Quebec's a good time. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, I think there are sort of like language components here that I think are sort of a different part of the conversation around, you know, Anglophone or Allophone minority rights in the province. But what Quebec says it can do and the reaction to it or lack of reaction to it has been kind of like shocking, which is why I wanted to talk about it a little bit.
Yes.
And the Prime Minister, who, you know, I don't like to allude to his father because I feel like that's uncomfortable. But let's be honest, his dad was the guy who repatriated the Constitution, the one that Quebec didn't sign on to in 1982. And he has been asked a couple times now what he thinks of this bill. And here's his most recent answer from Tuesday.
I choose always to look forward, look to how we can continue to protect French across the country and in Quebec, while at the same time ensuring protection for linguistic minorities, including the Anglophone minority in Quebec. These are the things that matter most to me and will continue to matter tremendously to all Canadians. At the same time, there have been recognitions that Quebec forms a nation. It is a historical fact, a sociological fact, a fact of daily lives. And it is something that even Parliament has recognized. We need to move forward and ensure at the same time as we are protecting French within Quebec, we are also protecting linguistic minorities in Quebec and across the country.
So, I mean, that doesn't sound like someone who wants to get involved in a constitutional fight, that's for sure. It also sounds like someone who has come to terms with what he believes this means. The Prime Minister is talking there, alluding to a motion under Stephen Harper that concluded that the House unanimously viewed that the Québécois, not Quebec, that the Québécois form a nation. And then the second part of that motion was inside a united Canada. So it sort of did a couple things. It recognized that Quebec is different, but it said Quebec exists inside this country. And the way François Legault, who was himself a separatist for a very long time, including very long ago when I covered him, and is now more of a nationalist. What François Legault is trying to do, I think, is to tap into some of that stuff around identity and defining Quebec identity by using language, yes, but also by using the distinctness of Quebec. You know, I'm not a constitutional expert, and there are lots who say that, in fact, he can't do this. But I mean, it's so fascinating to me that the Prime Minister is just like, yeah, all right, I'm good to go on this.
Right. And he's not the only one. Like, that is one source of a place you'd expect, you know, some kind of pushback on this idea. But like, we are seeing other places where you'd expect the pushback to come, just not delivering on it. So like, one fun dimension of the story is Alberta is not that mad about it. You know, Jason Kenney said he's always thought that Alberta should copy Quebec and the way that Quebec defends its interests. And I actually think that might be a clue as to what maybe could happen here if the Quebec gambit kind of works. Like, I don't know, maybe Nova Scotia will amend the constitution to protect the rights of, like, Joel Plaskett fans. I'm not sure what other provinces could use this for, but the reason
I would protest that one. I would just start protests across the nation. Yeah,
ma'am, you have no standing here. I'm very sorry. Joel Plaskett should be protected. But we should also say, like, the reason this is possible, and I guess, like, this part is, like, for the process nerds who are excited about the story, is that Quebec is, like, not using the big constitutional amendment formula. That's, like, when you have to get two-thirds of provinces containing 50% of the population and a wizard that appears at a mountain at high noon during the vernal equinox. Like, I don't know. Like, it's, like, such a complicated formula. You're just not going to get consensus on that. But they're using the same mechanisms where you can affect a change that affects one province. So that's, like, the same mechanism that Newfoundland used to change its name to Newfoundland Labrador. But there's a question as to whether that would make it hold any kind of weight beyond the symbolic. Mm-hmm. Like, there's this sort of emerging consensus from a bunch of constitutional experts that I've read who said, like, this would certainly not supersede the language protections of the charter. Mm-hmm. So then when we get to, like, the idea of why is this not causing a lot of political ire, like, maybe the polls could give us a pretty good indication, which is that, you know, like, we keep seeing these numbers and the national polls have the Conservatives closing the gap a little with the Liberals. But where that support is coming from mm-hmm. is not even close to evenly distributed. Like, in Ontario, the Liberals are ahead by 10 points or so. In Quebec, they have, so far, an 8-point lead, and it could grow. Mm-hmm. And look, at the end of the day, like, the Conservatives could pull 30 points higher in Saskatchewan, and it still would not matter because, I mean, it just wouldn't, because Ontario and Quebec are the whole ballgame if you want to defeat the Liberals. Quebec has 78 seats between Ontario and Quebec. Like, that is, like, the path to a majority is always going to run through winning big in Ontario, winning big in Quebec. And so, yes, Bill 96 is not going to get a lot of play outside of Quebec, but inside Quebec, the Trudeau message is just basically, like, if it makes you happy, it can't be that bad. Like, that's sort of the approach they've been taking.
That's the approach. That's been my approach to the whole pandemic, for the record. But you're quite right that it is likely much more about politics than some, you know, total rewrite of how we need to view Quebec or the powers that Quebec has. I think a lot of people are probably rightly concerned that it could lead to things, as you point out. But remember that this prime minister has struck up an odd state of what we call in French détente with François Legault. Mm. Things are pretty chill in this relationship, even though, you know, François Legault doesn't always bend over backwards to make it easy for the prime minister. They seem to have a pretty cordial relationship. The prime minister's been to Quebec a couple of times recently, even during the pandemic, to make announcements with him. The federal government has started work on a reform of the Official Languages Act, which is not only to protect French inside Quebec, but French outside of Quebec. And now, on a previous topic on a podcast on C10, which is the bill to overwrite the Broadcasting Act, which a lot of people inside Quebec like, even though it's controversial outside Quebec. You can go back and listen to that episode if you want. All of these things sort of add up to a government that is interested in, I think, staying on the right side of Quebec. And mm-hmm. there may be real policy reasons why that is so. They may really feel that Quebec does need this kind of more protection of its language inside its own borders. But I think that the political stakes, as you said, are really where it's at. And that's probably why you don't have any federal leader of any kind speaking out against Bill 96 and saying this cannot and this should not be done. Because if it can be done quietly without rocking the boat, and if everyone can get some political payoff for it, I think everybody's just going to get in the boat.
What if there were a fountain of youth pill that could add decades to your life? Would you take it? Unlocking the Fountain is a podcast about the mysteries of aging and the scientific quest to slow, stop, or even reverse it.
When do you think we're going to have the first 150-year-old? I think that person's already alive.
Unlocking the Fountain. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so the day we're recording this, Ontario has like a little over 1,000 new cases of COVID-19. And I have to say, like, the last few months have so warped my brain, Rosie, that when I saw how close we are to under 1,000, I briefly thought, man, like, we're out of the woods. Like, it's kind of like I don't even register the gravity of a number like that anymore. Like, that's still 1,000 people. But the numbers were so high just a few weeks ago that I sort of started to like relax and drop my shoulders and be like, we're so close to under 1,000. What a wonderful place to be. And, you know, I begin to do that and then I start to catch how the pandemic is going elsewhere in the country and I get anxious all over again. So in your home province, Rosie, the fight is going particularly badly. Manitoba is at capacity for ICU patients. So, you know, when we say like ICU stretch thin, like we're not talking about that. We mean like this is it. They're already at the limit. And that is a scary place to be. Like I saw a tweet from an ICU doctor in Manitoba that read, admit, escalate, optiflow, intubate, prone, stabilize, transfer to Ontario, repeat. And she's not exaggerating because at this point, Manitoba sent 18 patients to Ontario and it's like not just to Thunder Bay, which is much closer, but as far as places like Ottawa, like London, like Owen Sound. And they're not stopping there. Like the province is in talks with Saskatchewan to send patients there. They're in talks to send patients south of the border to North Dakota. And, you know, maybe you're closer to this. Maybe you can tell me how Manitoba got there.
I'm closer to it because yesterday, I don't know how many, I don't think she'll mind me saying, text messages I got from my sister saying, what is even happening? What is watching a press conference with the premier who claimed that Manitoba has the strictest public health measures in the country, which is patently untrue. I think there's a combination of a few things that happened. You know, it had been Manitoba doing pretty well through this whole pandemic. And like some other provinces we've seen, put restrictions in place that didn't go far enough and has a premier who seems to think that vaccines will get him out of the situation he's in. This in spite of the fact that every public health expert I have ever spoken to or read has said that vaccines are part of the answer, not the whole answer. Again, on the weekend, Brian Pallister said that he needed more vaccine from the United States, asking for Joe Biden to send them up here. This at a time when Manitoba is vaccinating people for sure, but there are a few things that it hasn't done that we are living with in Ontario and that other provinces have done at the height of the worst of their waves. One would be an official stay-at-home order. There is not one. They pleaded with Manitobans before the long weekend to stay home. They sent out one of those emergency alerts on their phones to stay home. But there is no legal requirement for you to stay home. The other thing that they haven't done is close retail. They had retail open with limited capacity. They have reduced the capacity again. But you can, if you want to, right now, go to a Winners and get the things you need and leave. That is not something that is happening in Ontario, for instance, as we come out of the height of our third wave. So it's curious to me that, and this is not unlike what we saw in Ontario or Alberta, that when things are at their absolute worst, that the premier would point his finger to other problems. We've seen this with other premiers and we're seeing it again with Brian Pallister as they try to get things under control. They blame another level of government, usually the federal government, for getting them into the situation they're in. I think that that's disconcerting for people. But even more than that, what you talked about, the ICUs, the fact that they're having to send people so far away, but they are also losing people. Because of the strain on the healthcare system, at least one ICU physician, Dr. Eric Jacobson, says that 6 patients died while waiting for cardiac surgery because the hospitals are full. They couldn't get them in. I mean, these are very, very serious situations.
One of the striking things watching that press conference and listening to the quotes that came out of it was that we appear to be repeating the exact same sort of press cycle every single time. Yep. It happened in Ontario. Yep. It happened in Alberta. It's now happening in Manitoba. And it's like, we are 16, 17 months into this pandemic. It is no longer a mystery. Like, we know that when certain numbers start to go up, we know exactly what's going to happen in terms of the rates of hospitalizations that will follow, in terms of the strain on your hospitals that will follow. So it is, I guess, like, a bit mystifying to see those phrases and those claims repeated. And we should also say, like, Manitoba cast quite a shadow over a week of what would have been actually just, like, entirely good news across the country. Like, Quebec is moving up its second dose schedule for the vaccines. That's how well their rollout is going. Nova Scotia, same deal. And Nova Scotia is expecting to get a new reopening plan, like the details of a reopening plan, at some point this week. And like, then there's BC, and like, in BC, it's basically already a party. I mean, like, this week, it's bewildering. It is bewildering. This week, indoor gatherings of up to 5 people are back, and like, I don't remember how to gather with people, so I'm going to need some tutorials from BC people. Potentially starting as early as Canada Day, you can attend a family reunion, you can have sleepovers, and like, again, it is shocking to look at those restrictions and look at the rate that they're being lifted. It is really exciting to look at how well the vaccine rollout is going. But also, like, when you contrast it with a situation like what's happening in Manitoba, you get this, like, constant reminder that the pandemic is not, you know, equal across the country. And it just, like, everywhere you go, it just feels entirely different. And we haven't been all in the same boat the whole time. We just haven't.
No, we haven't. And we also haven't. It seems like we sometimes haven't learned from things that we know. And I guess that's probably the most frustrating for citizens, right? Like, even if you know what should be happening, first of all, sometimes it's frustrating to see the decisions not being made. And sometimes it's frustrating because those decisions help you make decisions. And so you go off and do something like go to Winners because, well, it's open, so that's probably okay for me. But maybe it's not. So you're sort of left a little bit on your own, which I think is frustrating too. As we're recording this, Alberta is now, which was the worst hit in the country, it's putting forward a reopening plan. It didn't take that long for Alberta to quash cases and to start to see the effects of getting people vaccinated. It won't take long for it to happen in Manitoba, but you can't assume that just doing one of these measures and not the other is going to work, because we know that you need to do all the things to better equip people. I think, you know, Brian Pallister has been under pressure in that province for some time now, and has, you know, he would say handled things pretty well in the first and second wave, and now is in this place. And again, I think that points to what lessons are you learning by watching the rest of the country or from the past that you can apply now? So now Manitoba has had to ask for help from the federal government. And again, we've seen this play out in other places, in Ontario, in Alberta, and people are going to come in, and nurses are going to come in, and contact tracers are going to come in, and they will help them get a hold of it. But it's a little baffling, to be honest, to still see us get to this point in order for those things to happen. That's the sound of something they're calling Hug Day in BC. You know that's a BC thing. I'm not sure that's going to catch on like wildfire.
BC. Yeah.
Everybody's hugging and they're clinking their glasses. And BC's top doctor, Bonnie Henry, said that this was very BC too. It's only if you want to hug someone, you might be able to do that as soon as July. I appreciated that caveat. You're not required to hug.
Yeah, some people are not huggers. I am a hugger.
You are.
However, some people are not.
Yeah, I can be, but am not always.
Fair enough.
Anyway, that's also, of course, the sound of last call. It took us a while to get there. Last week, we talked about calls to share vaccines globally. That was a good one. And we asked, do you want to see Canada share its vaccines with countries in need before vaccinating younger people here at home?
I don't think we got like a lot of middle of the road answers on this one. Like, people had very strong feelings about it. So one person said, no, we shouldn't be sharing vaccines just yet. Hopefully by the end of the summer, there are many seniors who are living in the community who have not been fully vaccinated, not to mention their caregivers and essential workers. Another listener said, absolutely, we should share our vaccine supply with poorer nations. Canada has a moral superiority complex. Woof. Saying we're better than our neighbors to the south is practically a national pastime. Hmm. Now is the time to back that up with some action.
You're right. Strong opinions. A listener in Saskatchewan wrote to us saying that although an important topic, I don't see a situation where a Canadian is told by elected politicians that their child can't get their first dose to return to school or lockdown restrictions can't lift because the vaccine was sent overseas.
And one more to share. This person wrote, I think it's premature for Canada to share vaccine doses right now. What we should do now is push to waive patents for COVID vaccines, diagnostic kits, and PPE so poorer countries can make them themselves and provide experts to transfer practical know-how.
Hmm. We love hearing from you guys. And so this week we've got another one. Many of you now, well, except for Manitoba, have reopening plans in your province or territory. Are you ready for it? How do you feel about the plan? Are you ready for things to reopen? You can tweet us. I'm at Rosie Barton.
And I'm at Elamine88. And throw in the hashtag when you do. The hashtag is PartyLines. And let us know what you think.
That's it for PartyLines this week from CBC News and CBC Podcasts. I'm Rosemary Barton, Chief Political Correspondent for CBC News.
And I'm Elamine Abdul-Mahmoud, absolutely Chief Joel Plaskett correspondent and culture writer for BuzzFeed News.
I'm probably going to be in trouble after this one. Bye.
Absolutely. You're going to have to say that it's a Joel Plaskett emergency.
See ya.
Bye.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.